evening. The first order of business tonight. First order of business tonight are orders of business are two public hearings. The first is on the proposed local law number C of 2019, amending Chapter 32 of the Tompkins County Code. Is there anybody who would like to speak to the legislature on local law C? Close that public hearing. Thank you. And the second public hearing, recommendation of the County Agricultural and Farmland Protection Board to add 525 acres of land in the town of Lansing to Tompkins County Agricultural District 1. Is there anybody who would like to speak? And I have Mike Kaplink-Alaire on the Ag District.
Very much. I just want to support your support of adding these 525 acres to Ag District 1. As you all know, farming is very important to Lansing and most rural communities in Tompkins County, and this addition is very much in keeping with the quality of life in Lansing. So thank you very much for your support.
Thank you, Mike. And Monica Roth from Cooperative Extension.
Hello. Yes, I'm also speaking on behalf of the Ag and Farmland Protection Board, and just wanted to bring everybody up to date. Tompkins County has had ag districts since about 1971 when the state law was enacted. Ag District 1 is in the east side of the county, and we had this February, we have a one-month period during which additions can be made to the Ag District, request for additions. So we got a request from Dale Mattoon, who's a farmer. His main farm is up in Cayuga County, but he bought this land about 2 years ago, and to add to his farming operation. And so he has requested to have that land added to the Ag District. The Ag and Farmland Protection Board reviewed the request. It's a significant request in that we don't often see parcels that are 525 acres of contiguous farmland being added to an ag district. So it's very significant. It was in agriculture for eons until Kingdom Farm, as many of you know, asked to have it taken out of the district when they thought they might develop the land. But now it's really great that it hasn't become developed, that it is coming back into agriculture. So obviously the Ag and Farmland Board endorses the addition. We also did do outreach to the town. The town has an Ag Committee where we met with the Ag Committee. They obviously are in support of this because they're mostly farmers. And it's a key piece because it's almost a buffer to the rest of agriculture in the northern part of the town of Lansing. So it's really a cornerstone that provides some protection for all the farms, really. And Ag and Markets likes that when there's contiguous agriculture land to additions that we're making. It's also been reviewed by the town board, and the town board endorsed the addition to the district. And so we're at the final stage, bringing it to you, and wanted to just remind you that it does fulfill the New York State criteria, and some of the factors are active farmland surrounding the area, that it's actually viable land, and it is good soil, some of it really good soil, and some of it maybe not quite as well drained, but very farmable. It's been in continued agricultural use for a long time. It is consistent with town zoning. The town actually identified that area to create an ag zone and move it into an ag zone. And so we think it's an appropriate action for the county board to take to add this to Ag District 1 in the town of Lansing. The Ag District also covers parts of the rest of the east side of the county in Groton and Dryden and Caroline. So thank you for your consideration. And Lynn Davidson's here. He's also from the town of Lansing and a farmer who actually got out of the field today to come here. So I want to give him a minute to speak.
It'll be a very brief moment.
That's right. Welcome, Lynn. Take your time.
All right.
No, I just concur with Monica's statement and the town board statement, and it has been farmed continuously, even while it was, quote, going to be a 2,000-head training center for the Jehovah's. So it's a pretty neat piece of property. I was asked to speak for the planning board, but we never saw it because it was and we don't have a meeting until it would have gotten to us, and I did a little straw poll. Everybody on the planning board that got back to me, we're happy with it. So anyway, we'd go forward. It'd be wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would anybody else like to speak on the Ag District addition? Mike, I mean.
Well, I live right next to this, like literally right next to it. And I will say it's one of those things that we're passing, that it's almost like we're passing it, and it's like so obvious that we should do it already because it really has been farmed. I've never seen anything else happen there. And it's actually a really nice piece of property. It's always yielded pretty well. And I think it's actually had an impact on some of the other fields locally. Like there's the field across the street from me, which is actually zoned residential. One day may become houses, but Adam Buck went over and started farming that and has really made the soil back to what it could be. So it's now workable farmland across the street from me, too. So I think by having something that's working like that, it actually has an impact on neighboring fields because you already have a farmer in that field. And then they go, well, that field that wasn't producing so well, we're going to bring that up to snuff, too. So it has this kind of rolling impact. So it's exciting. So thanks.
Great. Thank you, Mike. Anyone else? Deborah.
I guess I can say my piece now or say my piece later, but as chair of Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality, I don't see that this is a particularly controversial resolution, and other than the fact that it's a very large piece of land, I guess it probably wouldn't even be on the regular agenda. But it's a lovely farm. It's been a farm for as long as I've lived here. It's an important part of the agricultural community in Lansing, and I hope that we can all see our way clear to vote yes. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? All right. Thank you very much. I'll close that public hearing and open the meeting of May 21st of the Tompkins County Legislature and ask you to join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members.
Anna Kellis.
Here.
Dan Klein.
Here.
Ann Corman.
Here.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne.
Present.
Dave McKenna.
Here.
Glenn Morey.
Here.
Mike Sigler.
Here.
Shauna Black.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Henry Granison.
Here.
Rich John.
Here.
Martha Robertson.
Here.
14 members present.
Thank you. I would like to just mention I have, we will need a brief executive session tonight to talk about litigation, and I will reorder the resolution so that maybe after legislator comment we will go right to Resolution G for the Planning Committee. Deborah? Okay. All right, great, for the Ag District. All right, but first I wanted to celebrate Tompkins Community Action. Lee Dillon, come on up. I have a proclamation here, and I will read, whereas community action agencies were created when the Economic Opportunity Act of 1964 was signed into law, and whereas Tompkins Community Action represents this national network in Tompkins County and has a 53-year history of partnering with households with low incomes to promote self-sufficiency, and at least 19,120 Tompkins County residents live on incomes at or below the federal poverty guidelines, and whereas Tompkins Community Action has made an essential contribution to individuals in Tompkins County by providing innovative and cost-effective programs to attain skills and knowledge to secure opportunities necessary to become self-sufficient, and whereas all people, regardless of income, deserve opportunities to improve their lives, thus ensuring that all the county citizens are able to live in dignity, and whereas Tompkins County, New York State, and the entire United States must continue to wage war on poverty by providing support and opportunities for all citizens, now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim May 2019 as Community Action Month in Tompkins County. Lee Dillon, a longtime executive director of Tompkins Community Action.
Thanks, Martha. Good evening. Thank you very much for this little bit of time. I wanted to also, I gave Kathy our annual report and a little sheet about our impact in Tompkins County for you, and I think she said she'll put it in your mailboxes, and you can grab that. This week, I'd like to invite you individually. I have not got an open house together yet for Amici House and the Harriet Janela's Child Care Center. But if you would like to come by, just give me a call. My cell phone is 607-279-1324, and I answer it almost to a fault. Lately, it's been a lot of faults. The FCC should do something about those robocalls, I'll tell you. So, anyway, please stop by. We're serving, at this point, we're full. We were full as soon as we opened the doors of Amici, we were full. We have 23 apartments for previously homeless youth, and currently the census is 29 adults and 9 children. Building the child care right across the parking lot was genius, and it wasn't my genius, but it was Carrie Berman's genius. And all the children are categorically eligible for Head Start services. So if you're homeless and you have a child in Head Start, early Head Start, or you're a pregnant mom, you go to the top of the list. We had one opening at Harriet. We don't throw out children to bring in new homeless children, but we do this fall. Everybody will have a child care slot. And as you may or may not know, Head Start, early Head Start is a fabulous, fantastic program for families. So we're serving 64 children and their families at the Harriet Janela's Child Care Center. I hope to have an open house probably late summer. You all will be invited, of course. But please, in the meantime, if you just can't wait to get in there, just call me and we'll go for a tour. Thank you very much for your continued support, and I look forward to seeing you all again real soon.
Thanks. Thank you so much, Lee. TCA does excellent, really important work. Thank you very much. All right, I have a few blue forms tonight for public comment. By signing one of these forms, you agree to the following. I agree to a 3-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. So I have first Laurie Konwinski and then Wales Brown.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I serve as Deputy Director of Catholic Charities, and I coordinate our Justice and Peace Ministry. And I'm here in that role today to talk to you about a resolution that Ms. Black is going to be presenting tonight, and we speak in support of it and on behalf of the New York State Catholic Conference. This is a resolution on a law that would greatly reform solitary confinement in our state. So I just wanted to read for you some part of the statement from the New York State Catholic Conference in support of this bill, which is Assembly Bill 2500 and Senate Bill 1623, called the HALT Solitary Confinement Act. The Catholic Conference writes, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Torture has denounced solitary confinement that exceeds 15 days. Additionally, there are far too many people in isolation, disproportionately people of color. On any given day, there are nearly 3,000 people in isolated confinement in New York State prisons, locked in concrete 6-by-10-foot cells for 23 hours a day. In 2000, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops announced its opposition to the increasing use of isolation units. And in 2014, Pope Francis stated, "The lack of sensory stimuli, the total impossibility of communication, and the lack of contact with other human beings induce mental and physical suffering and significantly increase the suicidal tendency." The Bishop of the Diocese of Albany in a 2016 op-ed wrote, "Social science has affirmed that solitary confinement works against the purpose of rehabilitation and restorative justice. It also works against the purpose of improving public safety, both inside our prisons and jails and in our communities. For all Americans committed to building a safer, healthier society, we cannot ignore the mental illness, debilitating trauma, and recidivism that are hallmarks of placing inmates in solitary confinement." So we applaud the sponsors of the Assembly and Senate bills for their persistence in passing this needed reform, many years now, and the New York State Catholic Conference, and I would join the Voice of Catholic Charities, urge its quick passage by the legislature. So I would ask you please to support that resolution so that our state government knows that Tompkins County wants the passage of that bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Laurie. Wales Brown and then Josephine Cardamone.
I'm Wales Brown. I live in the city of Ithaca, and I'm a member of the Ithaca local group of Amnesty International. One of the topics that Amnesty International works on all around the world is the treatment of prisoners. Whatever you do to prisoners, it shouldn't ruin their health and their ability to work, but solitary confinement does do that. There's now a bill in the state legislature called the HALT Act, HALT, Humane Alternatives to Long-Term Isolated Confinement, Assembly 2500, Senate 1623. It will cut down the maximum time that anybody can be kept in solitary down to 15 days, and will make sure that solitary is never used on adolescents, pregnant women, and people who need treatment for mental illnesses. Colorado and other states have passed bills like this, and correctional employee unions have been in favor of them because they yield a more peaceful atmosphere inside prisons. Three groups have been working to get the state Senate and Assembly to pass the HALT Act. The main one is CAIC, C-A-I-C, the campaign against, the campaign for alternatives to isolated confinement, with its main office in New York City, but members and field staff elsewhere in the state. The other two are local, my group, which is Group 73 of Amnesty International, and the Ithaca Prisoner Justice Network. You may have seen us gathering signatures outside the public library from 5 to 5:30 p.m. every 23rd of the month. We write to the governor, the heads of the Assembly and Senate, and our own Assembly person, Barbara Lifton, and State Senator Mr. O'Mara. The bill couldn't pass for the last few years. I did in the Assembly, but not the Senate. But this year it has the co-sponsorship of a majority of the state legislators. So we're pressing the Assembly and Senate leadership to bring it to a vote before the end of the legislative session, which is June 19th, unfortunately. Now, we know that county legislatures don't pass state laws, but statements of support from county legislators do make some impression on the state government. So I appreciate the chance to talk to you about this bill, and I hope you will adopt Shauna Black's resolution.
Thank you, Wales. Josephine Cardamone, and then Faye Gugakis.
Hi, I'm Josephine, or Joey Cardamone. I live in the city of Ithaca, and I'm here, like Wales and Laurie are, to talk about your support for a resolution in this body to support the bill that we want to become a law to limit the use of solitary confinement in New York State's prison and jails. If I read, maybe I won't go way over my time. So I'm a member of the same group as Wales, a statewide group, take for campaign for alternatives to isolated confinement. We have been working very hard for several years to get this. Finally got it through the assembly, and all the people in the assembly said, you'll never get it through the Senate. Forget it. But there was a change in personnel after the last election, and we did get it through the Senate. But now the urgency is to get it onto the floor before the legislators go home for their summer, because then we'll have to start kind of all over again in the fall. We'd rather get it passed now, because there are 4,000, I disagree with Lori, I'm saying 4,000 people in New York State are in solitary confinement right now. Let me share with you the words of the late Senator John McCain, who most of you know was held as a prisoner of war in Vietnam for 5 years, and he was tortured regularly. But he spent two of those years in solitary confinement, and he had this to say: it crushes your spirit and weakens your resistance more than any other form of mistreatment, including physical torture. In solitary, a person is in a room that's like a box about the size of an elevator. It has like a bed that's a thin mattress on a cement slab. It has a toilet, but very little else. No window. There's no human contact. Food comes through a slot. If you need medical care, it comes through the slot. If you have to get insulin daily, you put your arm through the slot to get it. That makes sure you don't have any human contact. Let's see, you do get recreation for 1 hour a day. That's how your 24th hour is spent. But it's not like you get to go out in the yard and hang out. You're walking sort of in a cage in a kind of a dog run alone. Solitary does cause tremendous suffering, mental breakdown, and even suicide. The United Nations says any time in solitary beyond 15 days is torture. The HALT bill would limit the time to 15 days and, more importantly in my mind, provide therapeutic treatment so people understand how to cope. We're really asking you to support this resolution. Allow me one more minute to clear up two big misconceptions about solitary confinement. One is people think that people are in solitary because they're savage thugs that would harm a lot of people if they were allowed to be out of solitary. But that's not true. The majority of people go to solitary for disciplinary infractions, usually very minor. You had more envelopes in your cell than you're really allowed, or you talk back to a CO. So they're not there because they would harm a lot of people if they weren't there. The corrections officers.
Joey, thank you. If you have that in writing, you could put. Okay. You could hand that in to us if you'd like. The 3-minute limit does pertain. Fagugakis and then Mac Cardin.
Good evening, Fagugakis, City of Ithaca. I came again to speak about the Lyme bite problem in our community. I wanted to first start with Ann Corman because you seem not to ask me the question, but ask other people questions, and you're not getting the right answer back. You're saying, why do the regular bikes, Lyme bikes, there's not enough of them? Well, these companies don't want the regular bikes. That's their way into communities. They want to bring the e-bikes and then the e-scooters. That's happening in a lot of places. This is not a secret. You just have to. I spend a lot of time online. I spend a lot of time calling people. I'm fighting this all by myself in a city that talks about being progressive and saving the planet. And I don't see how they're not making that connection, because this company and others like it are bullying other communities. They're a profit-making business. Now, somebody at the meeting in City Hall said, oh, you're against profit. No, I'm not against profit. I'm against profit. If a company is profiting over other people, do you understand what I'm saying? You're making a profit when you're doing endangering or doing something bad to somebody else, okay? I find these companies are not responsible. So just to answer your question, because I only have
3 minutes, and I can't. I've been wanting to answer that question for you. They're not going to tell you that. Nobody else is going to tell you that, because I've seen representatives not tell you that. But that's what's going on. Okay, they're going to bring the e-scooters here. There's no place to put them. There's no place to put the Lime bikes. I fought with the library staff 3 weeks ago when I politely asked them. All the Lime bikes took up all the library slots. All of them. And I went in very politely and I talked to the staff, and they I can't help you. Then they brought me to another person, and then I asked for the supervisor. So then I got ganged up on, and then I got upset. And I think I have a right to be upset after I've asked politely, you know. So now, after I left that day 3 weeks ago, they put signage out saying no Lime bikes placed here. And that works. But the company doesn't want to do it. The mayor doesn't want to do it. The mayor brought Lime here all by himself with Bike Walk Tompkins. No accountability by any of them. Okay. When Jeff Goodmark spoke 2 weeks ago at the Planning and Development, he said, we go into communities. We only want to speak to the mayor. No public hearing, no interaction with the council. Do you think that's right? And then he said, we don't want bad publicity, which is why the Cornell Daily Sun, after asking me to write a letter, and I took 2.5 hours to write, never published it.
All right, thank you, Fed.
That's what I'm up against. But I urge you to please think about, there's real deception here, and I don't want this in our community.
All right, thank you, Faye. Mac Cardin and Barbara Reaganspan.
Hi, I'm Mac Cardin. I'm here to speak and voice my concerns about the expansion of the Ithaca Airport going on right now. I'm concerned about the fact that it's going to establish a hub in Tompkins County for customs and border enforcement. As a sanctuary county, there's a lot of vulnerable members of our community who count on us to protect them from these kinds of branches of the federal government, and I think that inviting them in is irresponsible of us if we want to continue to be a sanctuary county. I'm also concerned about the fact that it seems to be that this airport expansion is done mostly with the motivation of expanding the Ithaca Airport's ability to take private jets and charter flights. And putting these two things together, it seems to me like this is part of, like it's making Ithaca a place which is more comfortable and more accessible to the luckiest and wealthiest members of our community at the expense of the taxpayer, at the expense of the most vulnerable members of our community. So I wanted to come here and say all that. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Matt. Barbara Reaganspan, if anybody else would like to fill out a form, they're in the back of the room.
Thanks for those comments. So I could reiterate all of those comments. I wanted to start out by thanking Shauna Black for the work she did on the HALT resolution. I think it's really important. Obviously, I support all of these eloquent statements about it, and I certainly expect that it would pass. The only thing I want to add about the opposition to the airport expansion is just what it means to face the reality that if the United States had signed on to the Paris Climate Accords, how different the issue of expanding the airport would have been, how differently it would have been greeted immediately, because it would have raised, it would have raised the very important discourse about the connection between species extinction and climate change. That would have been really important, so that in places in Europe where there have been moves to expand airports, you would have had a discussion like about what it means to not be able to clear-cut the woods on on Warren Road. You would have had discussion about what it meant in the environmental impact statement that you couldn't clear-cut the woods in June or July because that's when the bats were going to have their babies. You would have had to face the fact that what it meant to be able to clear-cut the woods in May was that you're just deferring the death of that species because it won't have a habitat in the future. These kinds of discussions are happening in places places that have signed on to the Paris Climate Accord. So I guess what I want to point out is we don't need to be behind. In other words, we don't need to follow the right-wing turn of the national discourse. We could get ahead of that discourse and say we're going to face the reality of the interconnections between species extinction and climate change that other people are already having to face. We would not be able to speak to people in the community saying, oh, there is not going to be any increased jet fuel combustion emission expansion. There won't be any increase because of can I just say one more sentence?
One sentence.
The one sentence is that that what I realized about that statement is that it suggests that when you say there will be less car transportation because people will fly here instead of flying into Syracuse, then you're pretending that the airport expansion project is about stealing flights from Syracuse. Now, if that's...
All right, thank you, Barbara. Appreciate your time. Is there anybody else who would like to address the legislature? All right, I want to welcome Duxon Nguyen in the back there from City Council. Thank you very much for coming. Are there any other municipal officials hiding in the corners? Okay. Hi, Doc. How are you? Thanks very much for joining
us. Good. How are you? Let's see. So not much happened. I think George covered what happened at Council. There's only been committee meetings since. So stuff that's moved forward to Council next month is the scooter pilot was approved after committee with some amendments. So the committee wanted a 10-mile-an-hour speed limit, among other things I can't remember right now. There's conditional approval for the CMC Carpenter Circle project. So that's near the community gardens.
Can you speak up a little more?
I'm sorry. Yes. And the CA committee passed a Green New Deal, or Ithaca's Green New Deal, which is what you probably read about in the media, with an addition of a 50% emission cut in the city's transportation fleet. And that's it.
All right. Thank you, Doug. Any questions?
I just wanted to say thanks to the city. You can take this back to the city for converting some parking lots over on Court Street at the corner of Court and Tioga to loading zone. I think they're 15-minute spots. As far as I'm concerned, this is the first time that there's a parking spot near the county offices where a county resident needs to, if a county resident needs to come do some business at county facilities, that now is a spot that they can park for free for a few minutes while they run and then do their errand here. So thank you.
I'll pass that on.
Mike Sigler and then Rich John.
I know you can't speak for the mayor, but as part of his Green New Deal, is he putting a natural gas moratorium on all new construction in the city?
Yeah, I saw you ask that online, and it's a good question. I think that'll be part of the climate action plan that's formed when we figure out how to achieve carbon neutrality by 2030, and that'll probably be a part of it.
Rich, and then Anna.
Thanks for coming in, Doc. I was just wondering if you knew anything about the Board of Zoning Appeals and trying to get some new members. Is there a recruitment drive going on?
Yes, but probably we could probably do a better one. I forget how many vacancies there are, to be honest.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
I forget how many vacancies there are, and we could probably do a better job of trying to fill them.
Does somebody have to be a city resident to be on the BZA?
I believe so. Yeah.
Are there any other requirements?
No. It's not like the BPW where there's a political party requirement, which is extremely difficult to satisfy in the city of Ithaca.
So we can nominate Rich and Anna and Leslin and Henry? Is that what you're saying? All right. Anna? Anna.
Well, since you have a city rep, you're invariably taking the heat for the Green New Deal from the county, but there's two things. I know I've heard one concern that a lot of the things that were stated in the announcement are things that the city is already doing or has proposed or promised to do from many years ago. So I'm more interested in the components. There are a few components that are new. And the other thing, you know, I hope this isn't sort of an out that was laid into the announcement, but there was the inclusion of, you know, of course, this depends on state and federal funding and support, but I'd be more interested to hear what this city is committed to doing and promising to do independent of or regardless of whether they get state or federal support.
Yeah, I'd be afraid to overpromise personally, but I would say that the city-specific things, such as getting the city's electricity use from renewable sources without just energy credits, or reducing our transportation emissions, would be things that we would do regardless, or getting the green building policy out, or getting a policy out for existing buildings. The community-wide one, or the city-wide one that includes private property owners and drivers and everything, may include a component that relies on state and federal funding. And that plan, again, is going to take input from city residents and commuters and the business community and experts from Cornell and elsewhere. It'll be a big effort.
When is the green building policy? What's the status?
We are meeting tomorrow, actually, the working group. We want a draft out by summer, which is intentionally kind of hazy. I think June was the target, and that seems unlikely right now. But I'd like to think by end of summer we'll have a legislative draft that council can consider.
Also, what's the timing on the e-scooters? You passed it out of committee. Does it go to Common Council?
It comes to Council first Wednesday in June. And if it passes there, then it would authorize the city attorney to form an MOU. These are pretty general guidelines, and so the specifics would be hammered out by the city attorney with Lyme for an MOU.
Because isn't there a time limit on the pilot?
Yeah, to like November. So we are kind of running out of time for a meaningful trial.
I guess Sean, and then come back to you, Anna.
Hi, Doc. Thanks for coming in tonight. I was wondering, I know that we are going to have a resolution this evening for the community outreach worker, and I know that the city is actually increasing the amount that they're going to be funding as well. Can you tell me, is the amount that they are going to increase going to be coming out of the money that was supposed to be spent on LEED?
I don't think so. No, okay. I mean, that was a separate $25,000, and it currently sits in contingency and will be, I think it'll be used if you pass what you're passing tonight or considering tonight.
Okay. And then are there any updates on LEED?
I'm afraid not.
Okay. Thank you. Just one actual follow-up to Henry's. Isn't it still illegal at the state to use scooters? So is there a stipulation or some allowance for pilots at the state? I'm just curious how that's working.
No, depending on who you ask, it is either explicitly illegal or legally hazy. But it's pretty well understood that no one at the state is going to enforce it. I can be fairly confident that IPD would not enforce a ban. They would, to the best of their ability, enforce non-sidewalk riding. Even that would be difficult because they usually have bigger fish to fry. You know, if I'm being honest, I would say it's kind of like marijuana legalization, where it's a bit of a
civil disobedience for a move that I think is wise. But, you know, opinions abound.
Mike Sigler?
I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but we have four. I mean, doesn't that open the city up to, like, wicked big liability?
I think that'll be, you know, I don't think the city attorney has weighed in yet on that front. But Lyme is insured for what it's worth.
Yeah, but anybody can get sued, you know that.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Henry?
Does any other city in New York State have scooters?
I don't think so.
New York City has scooters?
Well, I don't know about who's there, but Lyme's closest is Hoboken. They just started that 2 days ago.
Okay, I've got something. Two things, actually. On the energy, you know, the energy idea for existing buildings and for new construction, there can be some really tough choices to have to make. And I hope that unintended consequences such as increasing the cost of housing will be weighed as you think about how to roll out higher energy standards, which I, of course, support as well. But there's some really important trade-offs that really shouldn't be ignored. It's a complicated equation. And I can't believe nobody talked about Stewart Avenue yet. I mean, I think it's only, so far, I haven't been able to go down there because it's closed off, but it seems like it's just the block closest to State Street, right, that's been repaved?
I haven't seen it yet either, but yes, it's just one block.
And is the rest going to get paved too?
I'm not sure. It was a surprise to me, quite frankly. DPW just did it, I guess.
Okay, they just did it. All right.
Martha, I've driven on it. It is a joy. That one block
is
substantially improved.
With regard to the green building policy, so the original green building policy, we've already had those discussions. In fact, a big chunk of it is about affordability, but improvements that increase the overall cost of construction, and I'm confident that the same discussions will occur for existing buildings, and we will have the benefit of, you know, seeing how New York City's recently passed existing building energy policy goes.
Okay. I mean, I'm not saying I have the answer, but and then about Stewart Park, Stewart Avenue, the rest of, I mean, there's a whole lot of construction on East Hill right now. Is it going to be at least paused while how many thousands of parents are coming this weekend? Is there going to be a stop to it? Because it's already epic, really, the clog on East Hill.
I'll raise the question. I don't know.
It's going to be bad. Okay, Mike Sigler, and then Henry, is your hand up again?
No.
Okay, Mike Sigler.
Is it true that, I mean, I've heard this from a number of people, that you only are paving Stewart Ave to push your Lyme scooter?
Yes.
That.
Okay. Conspiracy theory is true. Yeah.
All right, anything else? All right, three cheers for Stewart Avenue. I hope you shut the construction down for the rest of the weekend. All right, thanks so much. Appreciate it. For legislator privilege, I'm going to take the privilege first to explain what I'm wearing today. If it weren't for this meeting, I would be at the rally on the Commons supporting a women's right to choose. Women's lives matter. I'm going to say that again. Women's lives matter.
Hear, hear.
And I am respectful that it's an emotional and complicated issue. But the real fact is you can't outlaw abortion. You can only make it unsafe. You can only make it threatening to women's lives. Because women will go to whatever lengths they need to go rather than be forced into childbirth that they don't want to go through. For whatever, many, many reasons, they might be making that choice. heard on the radio today, before Roe versus Wade was passed, was decided by the court, a quarter, 25% of all pregnancies in this country ended in abortions. 25% of all pregnancies. Where are we going with this? Because I will point out that a lot of the same people who are so opposed to abortion are also opposed to contraception. So Connie Cook was a Republican assemblywoman in the 1960s and into the 1970s. She was the person behind New York State decriminalizing abortion in 1970, 3 years before Roe. And she told her fellow legislators that the strongest voices she heard asking that New York decriminalize came from emergency room doctors and funeral directors who were tired, exhausted, and appalled at having to treat and often bury women who had self-aborted or gone to illegal operations. This is what happens when you try to outlaw abortion. This is the most profound choice a person has to make, and it needs to be a woman's choice. With, you know, Roe versus Wade, finding an elegant balance between viability and the interests of the state and the interests of the woman, I think it was a very wise decision, and I hope we can hold on to it. So. Thank you very much. Thank you. Women's Lives Matter. Anybody else? Legislative privilege?
Anna. God, thank you so much, Martha. I am so glad you said that. I just want to add, I've been talking to therapists recently, and I also do some therapy myself with women. And every single woman that I have worked with this week has come to me traumatized on this issue and feeling unsafe in this country. Was the topic on every single woman's mind that I worked with this week. Mm-hmm. That's sad. The only thing that I would add to that just doesn't make sense to me is someone who says that they're pro-life, which is such a strange word because it feels like we're all pro-life on some, so I'm not even going to go there. Opposing abortion, but not mass incarceration, not caging of children, and no legislation on background checks for guns, and supporting wars. I have a hard time making sense of that. So thank you for that. And the only other thing that I wanted to add on another topic, but related as far as social justice is concerned, on Thursday, the 23rd of every month, Joey Cardamone mentioned that there is a vigil outside of the library to support the legislation that Shauna Black has brought forward. I really encourage everyone to go this Thursday, if you can, please. The more legislators there, the better. 5 p.m. Thursday in front of the library, because there will be a shout-out for a man named Jerome Wright, who was incarcerated for decades, spent over a decade in solitary confinement. He has been out of jail for 10 years. He is now a deacon in a church. He is an upstanding member of society. He has been a mentor to youth. He has been a supporter and mentor for people who are coming out of jail to help people reintegrate into the community, particularly people who've been traumatized by solitary confinement. He has been an activist for this legislation. And because of his activism work, he ended up with an infraction and violation of his parole at the very tail end of a 10-year period, and has been in jail for the last 6 months, has missed a hip replacement, his son with Down syndrome he has not been able to support, nor his wife, who is sick and bound at home. There are state legislators, local legislators, activists, tons of people who are crying out for his release, and I really think that we should lend our voice to that and support Ms. Black's legislation tonight. So that is Thursday at 5 p.m. outside the library.
Thanks, Anna. I got Henry and then Annie.
Well, I don't have a sticker because the school board does not give them out, but today's election day in the city of Ithaca, and I urge people to go out because the polls close at 9 p.m., and so you still have, 2.5 hours to go vote. I already did, but again, I encourage other people to do so.
Thanks. Throughout the county, all the districts, the school districts in the county. Thanks, Henry. Got Annie, then Amanda, and then Mike Lamb.
Thank you, Martha. And I also support a woman's right to choose. And if I was not here at this meeting, I would be at that rally. And I think it's heartbreaking that the organizations and most of the people that are pushing this forward against a woman's right to choose are men. And the majority of women support a woman's right to choose. And if men were able to get pregnant, I really believe that they would support a person's right to choose also. I, on a very different note, the Ithaca Festival is going to be happening before we meet again. And the county, we're going to be marching in that. And also, I'm going to be marching with Finger Lakes Pulse, an LGBTQ local group, and we're going to be lining up at probably about 5:30. And you can check on our Facebook page. We haven't received information yet of where we're going to be for the parade, but you can look on our Facebook page, and we welcome everybody to come and join us. And we'll have our new Finger Lakes Pulse T-shirts available for sale or for a donation. Thank you.
Thanks, Annie. Amanda, and then Mike Lane.
Thank you. Thank you for what you said earlier and for those who also share the belief that a woman should have the right to choose what to do with her own body. One fact that I read recently is that 1 in 4 women has had or will have an abortion in her lifetime. I have had an abortion, and there's 7 women at this table, so probably it's likely that one more of you has. Were the people you know, were your colleagues, were your wives, your children, the people who serve you food? Women have abortions. It's our right. And I feel sick about the laws that are being passed in other states. I feel lucky that I live in New York, where I am supported and women have more opportunity. And I don't know what to do about women who live in other places. It's distressing. So I hope that this country can go in the right direction and that we as a county can go in the right direction. We don't have the opportunity to make the laws about abortion or women's rights, but we can support what our state is doing and we can fight for what is right. And I hope that all of my colleagues will stand with me on that. So, thank you.
Thanks, Amanda. Mike Lane and Leslin.
Thank you. I hadn't planned to speak about this, but I do want to say thank you, Martha, for what you said. And Ann, I don't agree with you that it's the men against this. It was the men in New York State back in 1970 that passed the law that gave the women the rights that they needed to have. George Michaels out of Auburn was an assembly person. He lost his seat because he cast the deciding vote on that. It matters to men the same as it matters to women. They don't go through childbirth, but they care about what happens to women. New York has led this since the 1970s, and it will continue to lead, even if there should be a change in the law by the Supreme Court of the United States. I don't think that's going to happen. We're hearing the judges strike down these ridiculous laws that are being passed by some of the states in the South and other places. Women's rights are important to all of us, not just one sex or the other, and they've got to continue to be important to all of us. The other thing I wanted to mention, what I was going to talk about tonight, is that our community college, you know, sometimes it's the best of times and it's the worst of times. There was a tragedy for TC3 this past week when one of the resident advisors was sadly killed in an automobile accident very close to the college. I attended the vigil that the students put on for that, and it was a very emotional time. Many of her friends spoke, and it was... I wish you could all have been there because it really mattered. This woman was also at, Ms. Cadero was also at SUNY Cortland, and they also had a vigil ceremony for her that night. It's also the best of times because this week we're going to have graduation at TC3. I hope you all go to graduation. It's one of the most inspiring things that we can do and we support as a county. Talk about diversity. Mike Hall, our airport manager, tells us that we're second only to the Queens County as far as the amount of diversity we have here in Tompkins County. If you want to see that, go to TC3. See the women. See the men. See the people of different genders or transgenders, or see the foreign students that come in. See the part-time students. See the mothers with their children graduating and making their families proud. It is inspiring. And I hope that all of you take that. I know some of you do it regularly. Leslin, I know, for one. And Dave usually comes. Make it a point. And if you can't do it this year, please do it next year. Because it only gets better. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Leslin.
Thank you, Martha. I too, am going to weigh in with thanks again, Martha, for your statement. Mike, you said something very interesting. You said it was the men that give the women those rights. And that resonated with me because men shouldn't have to give us our rights, and neither should they have to take it away. We all were born some of us more than others, to have those equal rights. So no one should have to give it to us. We should have the right to do what it is that we want to do with their bodies. And I find it very interesting that we confuse so much of what I consider to be man-made religion with the rights of people. And that shouldn't be the case. That sat with me when you said it. And yes, the men led, like you said, the cause when our rights were being trampled on.
And I think that's what you, and I don't want to woman spleen for you, but I'm assuming that's what you meant, that men led that cause, and men in New York did, so that our rights will continue to stand firm, but not necessarily give it to us. I traveled this past weekend. Matter of fact, I just got off a plane about a couple of hours ago, and almost every conversation I eavesdropped on was about this issue. You know, people are buzzing, they're talking throughout this country about how we all gone incredibly insane. And it frightens me because I wonder what's next. You know, and, you know, roll your eyes if you want to, but as a person of color, as a woman of color, I always wonder what's next. What are we reverting to, and what is it going to look like for us? On that note, I also felt incredibly honored. I went to Atlanta for my great or great great, whichever one, niece's graduation. She's graduating from high school. And that was extremely important because this is a family that was raised by a single mother, my niece, and who struggled so much. And to have, you know, the graduation occur was a big deal. But what was even more special for me was to sit at this graduation yesterday and watch almost the entire graduating class be children of color. Black and brown children graduating with accolades and high honors and going on to incredible institutions of higher learning. It took a long time because they had to talk about all of what these children were accomplishing. And I realized that that's something you don't see often. I don't see that here. I don't see that very often. And I was reading Shauna's resolution here that 90% of the prisoners housed in secure solitary housing in a housing unit in California were of color. Can we reverse that and we have 90% of our graduating classes, you know, or a larger part of our graduating classes are people of color as opposed to having them locked up in prison? So I was hopeful being there, and I was glad I was there to witness that and the importance of it, and watching one young lady come across the stage who was clearly pregnant, but she didn't let that stop her. She's graduating, and watching these young men, and it was just heartwarming and incredibly, incredibly great. And speaking of graduation, yes, Mike, I encourage my colleagues to be at to go if you can to TC3 graduation. I've gone every year because the village that I call a family, almost every year somebody's graduating. but I want to give a special shout out to a couple of students who are graduating this year. Some of you have heard me speak of this program that the community leaders of color worked in collaboration with the Park Foundation and the TC3 Foundation to bring a scholarship opportunity for people of color, African, Latino, Asian, Native American community members who are interested in getting into the addiction counseling and recovery field, because we recognize in Tompkins County we did not have one single counselor of color in the field. And we also know that a number of the people who are affected by substance abuse issues are people of color. And so we worked very hard over the last 3 years, thanks to the Park Foundation for funding this scholarship. And we've had two groups of people go through this. And this year, two of them will be graduating. And they probably both will be working at our local alcohol and drug council, the first time in Tompkins County for us to have people of color in those roles. So I'm very proud of that. And we'll be there to support them. And we look forward to two more graduating next year and so on and so forth. So thanks again to the Park Foundation. Thanks to the community leaders of color. thinking up this opportunity. Thanks to the TC3 Foundation for making it happen. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you, Leslie. Anyone else? All right. Here's what I would like us to do. I'd like us to move the Ag District resolution and then the Community Outreach Worker resolution, if that's okay. And then probably the airport. Where is that? Which one is that? Is that from facilities? Yeah, facilities. All right. Deborah, would you take Resolution G, please?
Yes, I'd like to move Resolution G, adding 525 acres of land in the town of Lansing to Tompkins County Agricultural District 1, ID 8590.
And that's page 31 in your packet, seconded by Annie. Discussion. You already had some. Anne?
Hi, I want to just say that I heartily support this resolution. As one of the legislative liaison to the county's Ag and Farm Committee, but also just as a member of this community, one of the reasons I moved to this area in 1984 is because there is so much agricultural. We have a really fertile area. We have water. We have fertile grounds. We have forests, and a lot of people grow their own food here. And I've been a member of a CSA for 15 years, and I really appreciate being able to get almost all of my food locally. And I want to commend the Ag and Farm Committee for all the work that they have done on this, and also thanks to the folks that came and spoke today. And just to remind folks that this is in line with the county's comprehensive, the county and local comprehensive plans. So thank you, and I hope we get a unanimous vote on this.
We have the discussion. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? Whatever Annie says, okay, that's unanimous. Thank you very much. Thanks, Monica. Thank you. Lynn already left. Okay. All right, let's go to D. That's packet page 14. That is Dave McKenna, please, for the fuel farm.
Okay, I'd like to move Resolution D, authorizing the acceptance of New York State Department of Transportation grant, AIR 99, funding the relocation of existing fuel farm at Catawkins Regional Airport, and I move that.
Seconded by Glenn. Discussion. Anna and then Deborah.
Maybe Deborah or Mike, you could give us a little bit of background information on the state of the woods that are there. I've been hearing about this, and from what I understand, this was not a mature woods forest. Can you guys describe what this is that we've been hearing about?
Well, I've heard, I'm not exactly sure where the fuel farm is going to be. What I've heard is a lot of exaggerated moaning and groaning about trees being cut in connection with the DSD, NYSDOT facility. But most of the land on both sides of Warren Road, and I don't live very far from there, so I'm through there all the time, it's not old growth forest. It isn't even really nice forest of any kind, as is so much of the land around that area. It's farmland that has been laid fallow, and whatever's grown there grows there. It's mangy, in a word. So, and it is not as heavily forested as people seem to want us to believe. You know, people talk about hundreds of trees, close to 1,000 trees. Oh, my God. You know, it's like open season on trees. It really isn't. It's, like I said, it's mangy, scrubby, uneven growth.
I was just trying to understand.
Let's ask Mike. Mike, do you have anything to add on that? Mike? Mike Hall, Airport Director.
The issue of trees and their cutting is restricted to the property owned by the New York State Department of Transportation. It is a reverted field. The count of what you would consider a tree is very, very low, a lot of brush. If it weren't cut now as part of the state's development of the residency, at some time in the relatively near future, we would have to do it. And then we do it every 20 years because it's part of the obstruction clearance plan around the airport. And basically that says that on either side of the runway, there's a plane, no, not an airplane, but a geometric plane, and nothing can penetrate that plane. And so what happens as a matter of management of property around the airport is that every couple decades you've got to go in and clean out the brush completely, and then it grows up again. That's what's going on here.
Does that answer your question, Anna?
Just one last thing. The fuel farm then won't exceed, that'll be underground primarily, so that won't be an issue.
Now, the fuel farm is moving inside the airport fence down and generally in the vicinity of the sheriff. The tanks are all above ground tanks. The tanks that we have will be moved. If they need any refurbishment, they will, and probably add some additional tanks. There's a meeting this afternoon trying to define the requirements of the airport. Other municipal users who might choose to use that as their fuel source, including New York State Department of Transportation.
Thank you, Mike. That was very helpful.
And I understand the we've got $400,000 in this project from sale of the land to NYSDOT. How much? What was the total amount, the proceeds?
We got $1.5 million from the state and $400,000 contribution from us, if I remember my numbers correctly tonight.
Yes.
Right, but my question is, how much did the airport receive for the DOT land?
800.
Oh, 800, rough 830 or something like that.
840.
Okay. All right, so 400 of that comes to this, and say 440 goes towards the rest of the construction project?
Correct.
Okay, great. Okay. Any other questions or discussion? All right. Jason.
I don't know if we've had a legislative meeting since then, but just so everybody knows, we did get a $10 million for the FAA grant, in case you weren't aware. So I just wanted to throw that in there, since Mike's here. And Mike doesn't like to take compliments, but both you and Mike. I agree. In case you weren't aware of that.
I think we have had a meeting, but that's okay. We'll talk about it next time, too. So that's fine. Thank you, Jason.
All right.
Anything else? All right. All in favor of Resolution D, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Mike, that was the only one with your name on it, right? Okay. Thank you so much. Then, let us go to F. That's Mike Lane, Chair for the Community Outreach Worker Program, and it starts on page, packet page 18.
I'm moving the revised as adopted by the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. This is a 2019 appropriation from contingent fund for the Community Outreach Worker Program, County Administration. That's ID 8607, and I so move.
Seconded by Anna. All right, everybody's got that in your red folder. Okay. Mike.
We had considerable discussion about this, and we looked back in the minutes about what we did at budget time last year with respect to this money when we did put it in the contingent fund. The committee felt that what we should do is simply increase the funding for this year and then have a full legislative discussion about it at budget time this fall.
Ready to vote? Anna?
I know that there were a lot of questions about the discussions that happened among the city, the DIA, and the county for the designated people that were chosen to be part of that conversation. I'm hoping everybody got the meeting minutes that I sent. I know it was 5 pages sent yesterday. But I think that if you haven't had a chance to review them, I certainly would take the chance even after we vote on this, because it gives a really good sense of the deliberations and the careful considerations of all the different aspects of the issues that we ourselves had identified in this committee. Some of the things that will need to come back when this is reevaluated. I did want to point out that all of those stakeholders did communicate that we would like to meet more regularly, get regular reports and updates, and that was something that was understood and agreed upon as seen as something very valuable moving forward. I know that that was a concern that people had, and I wanted to assure people of that. The other thing that I would point out is that we have very few clear collaborations between governments. And although this was complicated and tricky and it took a while, I do want to applaud all the different governments for creating a collaboration for a program that is truly helping people. It isn't LEAD. I really do hope that LEAD happens. I hope people don't conflate the two, but that doesn't mean this is any less valuable. It just provides a different service and a very necessary one, as clear and evident from the increased number of clients that are using this program. So,
Anna, a quick question, and then go to Rich. When you say the stakeholders want to be involved in the future, going forward, I hope that means the steering committee. That
correct, the steering
wasn't
committee.
Really robust and meeting and didn't understand its purpose. Okay,
exactly.
All right, Rich.
Thank you, Martha. I wanted to speak in support of this resolution. It's been a long time coming. I'd like to thank my colleagues that have worked a long time on this since last fall when we had our initial discussions. And also, I think it is really important that we have the more formalized oversight. And while it's taken some time to get here, I think that's a really useful addition to the outreach worker program. So thank you, everybody. And I will support this.
Thank you, Rich.
Anyone else? Well, I would like to say I was on the group that met, and although I wasn't able to get to all the meetings, I think folks knew where I stood, which is that I was concerned that we'd be missing an opportunity if we didn't modify the program a little bit. If it were just another person Monday to Friday, I thought that wasn't as beneficial as it could be. The Downtown Ithaca Alliance did a great job on very short notice of surveying businesses, and it wasn't perfect because who you get in a retail operation may not be kind of the person who's most informed about the program like this. But it was better than what we had, and it seemed that Saturday was really clearly the highest traffic day. It wasn't exactly sure, wasn't exactly clear that they felt that was the day the community outreach worker program was needed, but it was very clear that that was when they saw the most activity on the commons. So it's an inference to say, well, that's really when we need the worker. I remain wishful that we would have a Tuesday to Saturday position instead of two Monday to Fridays. I see on packet page 25 where there's a description of once weekday service is at a manageable level, we will be able to explore further programmatic growth, meaning to talk about having to grow the program to get to a Saturday. I hope that's not what we're talking about. I hope we're not talking about three workers in order just to pick up a weekend day. I would like to see that shift. I think that's an entirely appropriate and valid thing to ask somebody, but once you hire somebody on a Monday and Friday, it's really hard to get them to move to Saturday. So I will support this. I'll reluctantly support this because I think we should have been more creative on this. But I see that we'll look at it in more depth during the budget season for the following year, and I certainly want to honor the collaborative that's gotten this to happen and recognize Family and Children's Services' dedication to the program. They've carried it for a number of years now without the full support, without financially stable foundation for it. So I certainly appreciate that. So just wanted to let people know kind of some of the background. I haven't had a chance to read all your minutes, so I assume that's probably in there.
It's in there, yeah.
Leslin.
Thank you. Since this resolution is tied to the proposal from Family and Children's Services, and I know that they're here, I had one simple question. The proposal that came to us on package page 21st speaks of June 1st as the date to get the second worker on board. That seems awfully short period of time, since we are now going to be passing our portion of the monies that's needed for the rest of 2019. Is that date going to be adjusted? Because I'm interested in hearing then, you know, how would the recruitment be going, the outreach, or if there's already somebody in mind for this position. So maybe someone can help me out here. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Hello. I actually don't want to start without saying, Martha, how moved I was by your comments about women's right to choose. Thank you so much for standing so powerfully for that. And, you know, I see a lot of folks here who really, you know, tussled back and forth, and which I think was a great process that really helped us get clearer and clearer and clearer about how this program is serving the community. And, you know, what we have in common so much is that we want to do what's best for the community. And so it was great to get so many different perspectives. Leslin, I'm sorry, I know you asked a question.
It's all right. Go ahead. Because I might have had some of the questions you're answering.
Okay. I'm here for you. Okay. So, yes, we're going to need to adjust that start date. That was an optimistic ballpark back in March when we wrote the proposal, and so here we are. So we obviously, this is such an important position. We want to do a careful job. A high priority is to have a second worker who brings some diversity to the position. I do have someone in mind. I've already been sort of proactive. All right, I'll go to number two. No, I'm already proactively working on that. It's a high priority for me personally and for our agency for that to happen. Did that get to all of your questions?
I think you did.
Okay. All right, thanks. Yeah. Okay, thanks, Leslie.
I'll go to Shauna and then Anna.
I think this program is wonderful. I think Tammy does an incredible job in the community. I constantly see her whenever I'm walking on the commons, interacting with just about everyone. So I think that's really, really great. The question that I did have that actually came up in committee was why the expense line for allocated management expenses was so high. In relation, it's noted as $17,477. And the total expenses is 118. So it just seemed kind of high.
Well, I'm going to do my best. So, I mean, that is kind of the expense. I mean, we do, as an agency, a large agency, we have rent, we have, you know, spread across a lot of people that have to make everything work. And that's what it is. So I, too, wish it was less.
Okay. And I certainly will be supporting this, but I would like to see someone working Saturday, too. So thank you.
Anna?
Just a few comments. One that I wanted to add just for timeline for all of us to know. The city approved theirs, so I know it was mentioned previously that it was in contingent. They actually don't need to vote on this again. So once ours goes through, that will automatically go into play, and that will save some time. So, Leslin, when we're thinking about timeline, that will help a little bit, that we don't have to wait for two bodies to vote on this again, as well as the funding from the DIA and the CMC. So
I think we're the last step in that. I wanted to speak briefly to the scheduling. In my meeting minutes, what you will see is that we recognized in the group, and particularly in the last meeting, that there are two fundamentally different questions. One is to shore up the existing program, and then the second and different question is the discussion of expansion. So what brought us all together and what brought the proposal originally to us in November from Family and Children's was the fact that they had reached a level of case management that far exceeded the amount of case management that could be done by one person. And what was happening was that there were responsibilities such as all of the reporting that were no longer able to be done. That's information that's really important, and Family and Children's recognizes that's really important, but they also recognize that the support of people on the streets that we've asked them to has to remain the number one priority. So the funding that we're talking about for this year is to shore up that issue, and that includes, or that concluded in the majority supporting the Monday through Friday, because there's probably 2 to 3 times the number of people that one person should handle. The other was that the referrals that are done by the program are to programs that are open Monday through Friday, and that is a huge component of this. So I did want to point that out, and then I also wanted to thank Tammy for the work that she has done. I just continue to hear stellar things from people. The last thing that I want to say is about support staff. To Shauna, your question, that was brought up multiple times too. And what I didn't understand myself that was explained to me was that there are more than one, multiple actual staff that support this program and do administrative work. So part of that is actually personnel from multiple people as well as rent. So, and we know that one of the biggest expenses for any program is personnel, which then puts it at the number that we saw. So,
Leslie?
So I didn't think we were engaging in the big, long discussion we were going to engage in, but Anna, you're bringing up stuff that's raising up all the questions I had. So should we do this, or should we wait until budget when we're going to... I don't want to...
Go ahead. We can just replay the tape when in October.
Oh, man. So, Karen, thank you. I'm not sure I understood the explanation of the allocated management expenses, and I was trying to understand what's the additional program salaries as well. There's a $9,000 for additional program salaries there. Salaries speak personnel. And so from what Anna is saying, it seems like that's where that goes and not where the allocated yes. Help me out.
I'm going to try it. You and I already.
So additional program salaries.
Yeah.
What is that?
So that's me and Karen. So
okay.
Because the program is situated within an agency that has multiple supporting players, right? There's mm-hmm. the direct service staff, and there's the supervisors of the direct service staff, there's a supervisor of the supervisor of the direct service staff. All of us put some of our time into this program. Development put some time into the program, finance put some time into the program, front desk put some time. So all of that, the percentage of time in the formula that we use to figure that out, the percentage of time of each of those staff members is what's included in, oh, the second one. The first one, the additional program staff, that's just me and Karen.
It's just the two of you.
As like we're a direct chain to the program.
Okay, and yeah. what percentage is, I literally was trying to get to it.
Yeah.
So what's the percentage that you use for calculating that, your time?
Oh, I'm way out of my depth with that question.
Well, look at you now. You send them all yours.
Huh? You know, because I mean, our Jeff Turney has explained it to me. Do you want to take that one, Karen? It's something that an accountant would know.
You know, I have to say I wasn't prepared to come here today to do the whole budget. So I'm, you know, respectfully, I wish I had the answer right on my fingertips for what the calculation was. I have to say that I think any large not-for-profit, we're pretty similar. That doesn't make you all feel better, but, you know, it's...
you know what, Karen?
It's what it is. We have, you know, X amount of development people who have to write the grants, who have to do all these things. So every person from all the people who answer phone calls, the front desk, who do get calls for Tammy, everybody is allocated a little bit of their time, and it's a certain calculation spread like peanut butter, like across the board to everybody.
So I'm going to hold my questions until we get to the larger discussion, and that's why I was saying that earlier, but it seemed we were engaging, so never mind. We'll wait until budget time, and then we'll send questions ahead of time.
Yes.
Thank you.
I would second that and just say that when we get there, that would be great to have those distinctions made, because it's a little, they sound a little bit like the same thing, and you don't have to answer it now, but if you want to, sure.
I wanted to say just something that's not accounting language, just like this, how I understand it, is that, so we have, you know, multiple programs in Youth and Outreach Services alone. We have five programs. So part of the calculation is really by head, like how many staff do we have in each program, and that's how we start to get at the percentage of, like, okay, so Open Doors is going to carry this much of the overall burden for the agency. Community Outreach is going to carry this much. DAP is going to carry this much. So that's how we start to get at that number. Yeah, does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Okay, good.
Okay. Anybody else? All right. We're ready to vote. We have a short form roll call.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Are there any no's? All right, that's unanimous. Okay, thank you very much, and we'll see you in September.
I just want to thank you very much, because this service really is something that's much needed in the community, and I think, thank you. Anna, Tammy has done just an amazing job, and I really appreciate your support, because it's great to have like a partnership between government and not-for-profits. It really makes a difference to the community. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you for the work that you all do. We appreciate it. All right. Have a good evening.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. How are we trying to clean up for anybody else? I think we're just family left. So,
yeah,
all right. So let me go back to a couple things under my report. I think most of you know that there's a meeting tomorrow in Albany. Irene Weiser and I are going, and Katie Borghella will be on the phone with the chair of the Public Service Commission, John Rhodes, and a number of staff at the Department of Public Service, as well as staff from NYSEG. And we'll be talking about the progress, or lack of progress, actually, of the non-pipe alternative in Lansing, and trying to look at how we can try to reformulate that whole initiative and make it work more quickly and more effectively. I think I sent everybody all those documents that we sent to the PSC and to NYSEG. So if you didn't get those, let me know. And I just want to point out why you have a small present on your desk. It says Tompkins County Department of Assessment, Fairness and Equity. These are in celebration of the 50th anniversary of our countywide Department of Assessment. And actually, Jay Franklin says, we started here as a county office back in 1970 and filed the first tax roll in 1970. But he said he was impatient. He wanted to celebrate in this year, because this was actually the so that means this year's tax roll is the 50th consolidated county assessment. So we thought that, you know, so it's the 50th assessment. So that's why we're celebrating. And he pointed out that Franklin has been an employee of the office for all five filings. His father was there from 1970 to 1996, and he started in 1997. They have saved about $7 million as a consolidated office in the 50 years, and we currently save over $600,000 a year as compared to a local assessment structure. And then they have a monthly report from the assessment department. If you don't get that, I think probably most people get that. You probably get those. He makes a point of saying that somebody named Thomas Paine
not the British are coming, but Thomas Paine, or the, you know, whatever the Revolutionary War person, but another Thomas Paine. It was his idea that when we went to a charter county, we in 1968 we passed the charter, became effective January 1st, 1970, and it was his. He was the county real property tax director at the time, and he spearheaded this initiative along with other members of the charter commission. And he said he was way before his time with this idea of shared services. Mr. Paine's push behind this consolidation was not a cost savings measure, but was to increase the professionalism in the assessment function, as many of the municipal part-time assessors were retiring. It's safe to say that Mr. Paine's vision has been rewarded. So we remain the only county in New York State that does a countywide assessment, and I think it is such a logical and efficient and professional thing to do. So thank you to Jay and your whole department. We are grateful for the work that they do every day. So that is my report. If there are any questions, comments? All right. Thank you. County Administrator Jason Molino.
Thank you, Martha. Several things to report. You may have noticed earlier this evening there was a young gentleman sitting next to Amy behind me. He has since left, but that was Nick Murphy, our fellow. He's here, he's alive, he's with us, but he had to leave, so next time we'll introduce him to the legislature. And
he's probably sitting at your desk, because the rest of the day he has to stand in the hallway, right?
Yeah. We do have a chair for him. But we'll bring him to some committees, introduce him to the committees so everybody can get a chance to meet him. Nick's jumped right in and is working on a variety of different issues, anywhere from the public health, mental health review, to some energy issues, to a variety of different things. So he's off and running, and like I said, we'll introduce him at some of the upcoming committee meetings. Shared service. We have a shared service panel meeting tomorrow after TCOG. You all probably should have received a correspondence or communication last week that would have been a letter from me that outlined a form that we've created through Laserfish for folks to submit concepts, ideas, so that they can be discussed by the panel. The floodgates have not, they're open, but we have not received the flood yet, but I'm sure it's coming of ideas. We've got a few that have come in, and I'll be setting up some meetings with folks to sift through them if they need more development or try to get understanding, but we've got a few already. So as folks continue to have ideas, we encourage them. It's a good way of collecting the information consistently so we can review it as a group. Last Friday was the grand opening, the opening ceremony, I should say, of the Tompkins Center for History and Culture. It was a great venue. A lot of hard work went into the opening. Much thanks to Rich John for his proactive effort. Much thanks to the legislature for approving the funding to support it. And obviously much thanks to Joe Mariana for getting it all organized and leaving it in my lap to organize, which is greatly appreciated, Joe. But it was a good first ceremony. If you haven't had a chance to see the facility, it's changed quite a bit. It's quite a transformation. Tenants should be squared away with leases. We just sent out the last two leases to the non-tenant groups, which would be Ithaca Festival and the Latina Civic Association. And everybody else should be squared away. I'll be probably going to the next governance meeting for the next month or two to work out any glitches and kinks as they get running, whether it's cleaning services or entry-exit issues. But the dialogue is open, and they're up and running. So that's a good thing. Lastly, I did have a conversation this past week with one of the property owners adjacent to the North Tioga Street properties that we purchased. I reached out to them after hearing them at the public meeting a few weeks ago, sat down, listened to their concerns. It's an owner of a piece of property that has several businesses in it. Just heard them out, tried to answer what questions I could, explained the process of designing and bidding and construction and what typically happens with demolition and so on and so forth. And my purpose for outreach was to establish a line of communication. If there are future property owners that express individual concerns, I'd be happy to go to their place, meet with them. We walked to the site. They explained explained a few things to the extent that I knew the information to share with them, and they have my information for a direct contact if they have any questions along the process. So if there's more residents or property owners that come up that have those direct concerns and want to meet one-on-one, more than willing to make myself available to explain the process of design and construction, so on and so forth. Outside of that, that's all I have.
All right, thank you. And the Tioga Street Committee will get set up to start meeting in June?
Yes, Katrina will be emailing the committee to get availability, what day of the week and what time will work for everyone. I just spoke with her today, so she'll probably send out an email if she hasn't already to the committee to try to identify a day and time of the month.
And the Census Committee, the same?
I did not follow up with her on that, but I can. Yep.
Okay, I'm looking at Marcia, but one.
When talking with Kathy about the.
Okay. Okay.
Full count committee.
Full count, got it. All right, good. Thank you. Anna?
Could you have Katrina share it with the full legislature for those of us who were not selected for the committee who would want to go anyway?
Yes, we'll make sure everyone's aware of the days of the month that those two committees make are meeting.
Great.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yep.
Amanda?
On a different topic, I was just wondering about the veterans as an agency person.
Sure.
And what's up with that?
Yep. Last week we've completed our interviews for the process. We completed the interviews of the candidates. I'll be getting some feedback from the panel members over the course of the next week or two and hope to make a decision in the next, say, 2 to 3 weeks.
Sorry. Anything else for Jason? Rich?
At the risk of repeating myself for those who were at the opening of the Tompkins Center for History and Culture, one of the things I talked about was that the legislature really stood up to do this, and I think we owe ourselves a little bit of gratitude that we've done this for our community. It's turned out very well, and it's working in terms of being a home for all of these not-for-profits that are going to support our history and culture. It is a great home. I called it our front porch for our visitor center, not just for the downtown where it'll be an economic engine, but for all the towns and villages outside of the city, that it's a great place to discover what there is to do and see in our county, and it's going to do that. But it took some foresight and fortitude by each of us to take the votes we did and to get it to the finish line. So if you weren't there, I wanted to make sure you heard that as well. Thank you.
And just a little history, too. A number of years ago, the Downtown Ethic Alliance and the Human Services Coalition, together, was sort of instigated by the Park Foundation, did a study, brought in a consultant to look at a shared space for nonprofits. There were a lot of, as always, small nonprofits that were looking for a home. We were looking for a space for the Office for the Aging at the time, so we were kind of in the mix as a potential tenant also. And at the time, everybody agreed it was a good idea, but there was kind of no champion, no core, no, like, who's going to really take this ball and run with it. Everybody had sort of solved their space problems well enough, and nobody wanted to take it on. So it really is interesting when it comes along that the History Center and Rod Howe had the idea, and then they really were the core, became the core. And I think the museum is beautiful and wonderful. I think in some ways the value of the upstairs might actually almost be as much as the value of having the museum on the first floor. So it's a great contribution. And Rich, we owe you a great debt of gratitude for adding that to your things to do and really sticking with it. Thank you so much. Leslin.
So I couldn't make that event because I really was not feeling well after the event up at the jail. And I thought that this was what I gathered, that it was supposed to be a soft opening, but it sounded like it was a grandiose something. Is there going to be a grand opening at some point for those of us who missed the soft, not so soft opening? Or was that the opening?
I think some of the individual organizations are going to be doing events. For example, the History Center is in the process of opening. They're still fitting out all the kiosks and electronics with the museum piece. They're also opening up their research library. I think that opened up maybe this week is opening, but it's still ongoing. I don't know if there's going to be another celebration. That was how I heard it build, was this was a celebration, but it was a soft opening for some of the organizations.
If that was a soft opening, that was the longest group of speakers I've ever participated in. There was like 30 people that spoke there.
I didn't think they were ever going to shut up.
I'm sorry.
I would be happy to repeat all my remarks if you'd like.
So thank you, Richard. At first, I thought you were giving me the lawyer answer and not the real answer. Thank you for getting to the real answer. I want a do-over because I missed it because I thought it was just a softy.
Yeah, we'll be selling the DVD for $14.98.
And not as many speeches.
And we'll skip the sewage backup at the place afterwards as well.
Yeah.
All right. All set with Jason's report? All right. Thank you. Jonathan Wood, County Attorney.
I don't have a report, but a reminder that there's an executive session where I wanted to talk about some litigation.
All right. Thank you, Jonathan.
Well, I was trying to come up with a grand lie. Like I was going to say, maybe I have a report, but...
You have a report. It's the whole executive session, All right. Thank you, Jonathan. Rick Snyder, Finance Director.
Thank you. On page 5, I have an auction report for you this evening that will tell you a little bit about our upcoming auction. And I wanted to, as you turn to that, I want to thank Andrew Brayman, who's my deputy, Jay Franklin from Assessment, and Darby Kiley from Planning and Sustainability, because they went with me this year out on the auction tour that we did on April 24th. During that day, as we rode out there and posted properties, contacted property owners, along with the auctioneer, we visited 26 properties on that day. So I'll be going over the number of properties that are now left. It is not nearly that high a number because of redemptions. I've even changed some of the numbers since this was printed, so you'll want to jot these down. But if you're interested in coming to the auction, it's on June 17th. It will be at the space at Green Star, 700 West Buffalo Street. And here's where the numbers change. There are not 5 residential. There are now only 4 residential properties. And instead of 12 vacant commercial, we're down to 9. So that's a total of 13 properties. That just happens to be the exact same number we went to auction with last year, lucky 13. So there may be 1 or 2 more that come off this list between now and June 17th. I also like to tell you about what's happened with Planning and Sustainability as they prepared their report for the GO committee, where they bring properties to their attention for removal for either conservation reasons or for one reason or another. There were 4 parcels that were pulled. My first 2 bulleted points there tell you about 2 parcels in Newfield, 2 parcels in the town of Danby. Each of those were pulled because they were stormwater properties that weren't finished or developed in a proposed development. We pulled those for liability concerns, all 4 of those parcels. Since then, we've done a deal or in the process of doing a deal with the town of Danby. We have an agreement, and it looks like they'll be taking over ownership of those properties. We do not have a deal with Newfield at this point, so those properties are going to be not formally foreclosed, but we're going to be not including them in the auction either. The 3rd bullet point is about 2 properties in the village of Groton that were pulled due to liability concerns, but that's kind of a moot point now because both of those properties have since been redeemed. I've included on the next 4 pages little spreadsheets and notes from our file that describes the various different forms of contact we made with property owners to sign certified cards, requests to the post office for addresses, different types of communications that we have a lot of times by email with the parcel owners. We have been asked in the past to try to report to our best ability which of these properties may be owner-occupied. Last sentence in that paragraph says there were 5 residential properties. That's down to 4 now, just 4 residential properties remaining. 2 are vacant. 2 are occupied. Of the 2 that are occupied, 1 is owner-occupied, and we can't tell if the other is owner-occupied or renter-occupied. So that's just 4 residential properties that remain. There is 1 commercial property that's listed on the commercial or vacant property spreadsheet where there's people living in it. That's because we put apartment buildings or rental units that are multifamily into that classification. There is 1 in Groton that's a multi-unit plus a trailer in the rear of the property. It appears, as we were out there and visited the location, we could tell that because of the building and the cars and the dogs and the chickens and the what have you, that there were people living there, but we don't know if there was an owner that lived there, but obviously there's other renters that live there too. The last thing I like to say is that we always try to have a final day of redemption is what we tell all the property owners on the final notice. We start promoting this when they can come in to do those installment agreements. We try to wrap that all up by a certain date. That date was this past Friday, May 17th. So it looks like this will probably be our final list with just 13 properties to go to auction on June 17th. I'd encourage you all to come if you haven't ever been to the county auction. It's very interesting. You can see what properties are going for, and sometimes they go for a lot more than what you would ever expect, and sometimes not so much. But that's all I have for tonight.
All right. Thank you very much, Rick. Got Annie, and then Mike Lane, then Henry.
Thank you, Rick, for your report and all the details that you put in this report. I had a question on the residential properties being narrowed down from 5 to 4. Which one is taken out of there?
The very bottom one, Ulysses, the Robert R. and Virginia Sneddon property is no longer on the list.
Great. That's the one I
due to an installment agreement that was satisfactorily executed.
Thank you.
Sorry, Mike Lane.
Rick, I know you and your department do a great job checking out these properties, because I think you know we on the legislature, the last thing we want to do is take properties by foreclosure, particularly houses where people might be living in them still. And we do, through your department, a wonderful job of narrowing them down. We used to hear, I remember when David was here, he would tell us, compare us to other counties, how many foreclosure sales they have. I remember Sullivan County in particular one time had a whole hundreds, it seems like, or 100 of sales. So to have 13, it's 13 too many, but it's still, compared to other counties, is remarkable.
I spoke to another county director when they asked me how many we had. I forget what county it was, Drew. You may remember. It might have been Sullivan, but it was a county that was very close to our size, 110,000 population, 330 parcels going to auction.
Wow.
County our size.
It's the enforcers you send out, right?
All right. Henry?
Kind of gentler.
Rick, what happens to the properties that you said that you didn't foreclose upon because of liability concerns?
The 4 properties, 2 in Danby and the other 2 were in Newfield, were stormwater retention properties. So those were removed. basically for conservation reasons, and we did not want the liability that we would incur if we took those properties on us, because the developments weren't developed and they didn't know what was going to happen to these properties. And we had successful negotiations. Jonathan was involved in coming up with the agreement with the town of Danby, but Newfield wasn't interested in the two that were in their location. The two that were originally thought of to be removed in the village of Groton had gas tanks or suspected gas tanks on those two parcels. And so because of environmental concerns, we don't want to take ownership of those properties. We're usually legally advised to not foreclose on those properties so the county would not take title to them. Thus, we would be in the loop to possibly be responsible for the liability of those environmental concerns. But like I said, those two properties were redeemed anyway. So the property owner came in just last week and made good on those.
Okay, so two were held and went to the town of Danby, and the other two actually got redeemed. Is that what you're saying?
Two are going to the town of Danby. The two for in Newfield are not going to be formally foreclosed upon, but we are not taking them to auction. We have some that builds into the system some time for us to try to do something with those properties, either with the town of Newfield. I understand that there's some stormwater conservation type of group that wants to meet, right, and figure out what to do with those properties. So we have time to deal with those two properties. And there was one more that came off the list since the tour, and that is up near where I live in Groton at the corner of Lick and Old Stage Road. There was a very small wooded property which we saw a foundation in there, and Jay said, you know, I think that property was once, that was the old Morton School, whatever the old Morton School was, many, many years ago, part of the Groton School District. And he contacted them, and there was supposedly at one time a reversionary clause in that deed that said that if it wasn't ever used, that it would revert from the Morton family. We had the Morton family name on the tax records. It would revert back to the school district. So that property has been excluded from auction, and it's going to actually be deeded back to the school district. But it's a very small piece of property.
So the two in Newfield where you've got liability concerns, is that so there's still no taxes being paid on that, right?
There's still no taxes being paid on that, correct.
Any other questions for Rick? All right. Thank you very much for the complete report. Really appreciate it. That's a lot of work, a lot of staff time that goes into that. Thank you, Rick. I have two resolutions to be added. Are there any to be withdrawn from the agenda? All right. The resolutions to be added to the agenda. Shauna Black.
Yes, I would like to add to the agenda a member filed resolution, resolution 8670, which is in your red folder, resolution in support of the HALT Act in New York State.
Is there a second? Seconded by Anna, and it needs 10 votes to add to the agenda. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right, and Rich John, you have the other one there.
Yes, this is resolution ID 8663, endorsement of legislative bills S5193A and A7417 to allow Tompkins County to extend its additional surcharge on telephone access lines. And I'd move it.
Seconded by Deborah Dawson. All in favor of adding it, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. So that is added as well. We can do the consent agenda, and then I think we'll go take a recess. Is there anything you would like me to pull? Just shout out. For this, I'll go to the advisory board appointments first. To the Stop DWI Advisory Board, Andrew Bonavia. To the Criminal Justice Advisory and Alternatives to Incarceration Board, Telly Mungabe, Bridget Nugent, and Judith Griffin. And resolution A, authorizing a public hearing on proposed local law number D of 2019, a local law overriding tax levy limit for 2020. That's ID 8644. And resolution B, authorization for a public hearing, Tompkins-Cortland Community College operating budget 2019 to 2020, ID 8638. Can I get a motion on the consent agenda? Moved by Shauna, seconded by Leslin. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. When we come back, we'll start with WDIC. Let's take a five-minute recess. Thank you.
There are chocolate chip cookies in the back.
Yes, thank
They're
you,
good.
Dan. Delicious. Okay, folks, let's get back in session. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslin McBean, Claire Boynshaw.
The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee will meet tomorrow, 3:30, in this room. That's my report.
All right. Any questions? All right. Thanks, Leslin. Housing and Economic Development Committee, Anna Kellis, Chair. Where'd you go? All right, well, I'll just say before the I got a WDIC, the Diversity Consortium annual or biannual luncheon and program is next Wednesday, I believe. And I think a few, is it Wednesday or Thursday? And a few, okay, a few people from here are going, so I'm looking forward to that. All right, Anna Kellis, Housing and Economic Development.
We will be meeting on Thursday at 9:30. We have a few presentations that might interest people. One is a report from Heather McDaniels from TCAD on local labor. And another one is a report on the Strategic Tourism Planning Board's strategic plan. That is in process right now. Also an update on a review of ACOD that may interest some people about that structure of that grant moving forward into this strategic planning phase. And again, that will be, oh, and the last one is the one-stop Skill Up Tompkins initiative. And that is part of the focus that this year's committee has on workforce development. So this is the second presentation that we have, and we'll have others for the rest of this year so that we can get up to speed on what our workforce development policies and focuses are. And that's it. We'll report.
Thank you, Anna. Any questions? Thank you. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. The Public Safety Committee met on Thursday, May 16th. We had a report from the Department of Emergency Response on their Brian Robeson came in and gave an assessment of their goals and talked a bit about what the long-term needs were going to be for the department in terms of large-scale improvements to our emergency communication system. There's some real money that looks like it's going to be needed to keep our system upgraded. I believe it was built out in around 2004, so it's 15 years in, and there have certainly been a lot of technical changes as well as just age of the equipment. So it's something we're going to be looking at in our part of our capital plan. I believe, Jason, you spoke to that at the meeting. So that was an interesting presentation. I also reported on the visit from the Vera Institute and a couple of the New York Giants who came to Tompkins County and took a tour of our jail and sat down and talked with us about criminal justice issues in our community. They heard from several representatives from College Initiative Upstate who spoke very movingly about their experience of getting out of the criminal justice system and into college and what that had done for them. So it was a really good, I thought, presentation, and it was nice to be able to have a couple of the New York Giants, Antoine Bethia, or Bethia, I should know that, and Michael Thomas, who are both in the defensive backfield, came up, and it was good. Anyway, we will be meeting on June 20th at 3 o'clock in chambers, and That's my report. I do have one resolution.
And you have two. You got the added one, too.
Yeah, oh, that's right. We put it on the agenda.
Right.
I would move resolution ID 8622, appropriation from contingent fund, terminal pay, Department of Probation and Community Justice.
Seconded by Deborah. Discussion? All right, a short form roll call.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Are there any no's? All right, that's unanimous. That passes.
And I have resolution 8663, endorsement of legislative bills S5193A and A7417 to allow Tompkins County to extend its additional surcharge on telephone access lines. And I would so move.
Seconded by Anna. Discussion? Anything else? Ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. And I would say this just reminds me of the Home Rule Bill on housing that we are still working on. This looks like the landline bill is on the road.
Call's been made.
Call's been made. Yeah, almost done. But the Home Rule Bill on housing is still got some work to do.
What's this landline thing you guys can talk about?
Huh.
It's extra surcharge for rotary phones.
I have a rotary phone. I do. Actually,
oh, wow,
I do.
Martha, that's saying something. Pal.
My grandson looked at it and says, what's that?
So does the History Center.
I know.
Oh, boy.
When your cell service goes off.
True enough.
I have a landline, too.
There you go.
I had
You're in good
thing.
Company.
All right. Anna,
where I get myself?
The internet.
I had one more thing I wanted to report on.
Okay, but for Anna, did you have something?
Well, I just wanted to add the co-meeting, the joint meeting on the 29th between PEDC from the city and the county for the co-location.
Yes, thank you for reminding me. We're going to have a joint meeting with the city to talk about the idea of co-location of the Sheriff's Department with the City Police Department. And this is, again, a preliminary meeting to try to get everybody up to speed on what's been discussed so far and try to determine where we go as next steps.
Is that what you were planning to...
Actually, no, I was just going to mention, we also had a really good discussion at the public safety meeting. A member of the public came in to ask if Tompkins County would consider a request to New York State to change its rules on hunting, that we are one of the very few counties in New York State that does not allow rifle hunting. You can hunt with a bow and arrow or a crossbow, with a pistol or a shotgun or a muzzle loader, but you cannot hunt with a rifle. And there's a lot of considerations there. We had a good discussion. Where this goes from there, I'm not sure, but it certainly was something I think we'll be thinking about.
Mike Sigler?
When are we going to, the co-location thing, are they coming up with locations soon? Or I know that that's...
There's a consultant that the county and the city have jointly hired who has looked at various locations all in the city because the city police department wants to be in the city, but also from the standpoint of reaching the whole county, it probably does make sense for us as well. But those are where the properties have been looked at. Those have been kept confidential because they include private properties, and there have not been any contacts with the property owners or negotiations yet. But yes, they have looked at specific properties and, in fact, winnowed them down.
And I think the initial conversation was, is there land in the city that would make sense? And then further, I think next week, a lot of discussion will be, what are we going to need to do to move that forward? Do we agree it does make sense? And what's needed? What do we need to know to move it forward the next step or two?
Yeah, I anticipate the outcome of this meeting, if it's positive, is to agree to go forward with further study to try to get a better idea of what could be on a property, how the logistics of the two police agencies working together would work, and some cost estimates of, you know, what construction costs would be. But again, it hasn't proceeded very far to this point other than reaching the conclusion that we do want to look further.
Anna?
Just curious, the discussions that you guys have had so far has only been about physical co-locating and nothing about shared services beyond that. Is that correct?
No, the police, the sheriff and the police chief and their personnel have had conversations about the basic question: how would this work? You know, what kind of facilities would be shared? For instance, locker rooms, meeting space. You know, there's always the briefing rooms. There's holding cells. There would be
booking.
Central booking, and probably having space for a central arraignment function, which we don't have in the county, but would be a real money saver if we got there. So, again, there have been those discussions going on in parallel.
Thank you.
Mike Sigler?
I don't mean to play a fly in the ointment, but I would have trouble kind of going forward with a co-location when they don't have a union contract and we do. So just putting that out there for you. Because
certainly, when we got the report from Ray Schlatter's group, and I'm trying to remember the name of that committee, about 2 years ago, and there was a recommendation to look at consolidation, it quickly became apparent, I believe, that consolidation was just too heavy a lift. And the idea of trying to mesh those union contracts and, in fact, trying to do an agreement where there's one police agency that has been out of contract, I think, since 2011, there was just too much uncertainty and too many negotiating points you'd have to try to work through. So the idea of co-location is that you don't close the door on the two agencies ever being able to consolidate. If you don't co-locate while both agencies are looking at their facilities, you'd have to wait for that alignment to happen again, which probably won't happen again for, you know, decades. But you're absolutely right that having the two bargaining units working in close proximity to each other is an issue, and it's a further issue when they're out of contract.
But that was the shared services study. That what you're
shared,
right?
Thank
okay,
you.
So that we had, CGR did the study. We got state money. I can't remember if it paid for the whole study, but a big amount of state money to pay for consultants to look at this, and they looked at the other most of the village forces as well. And it was a very interesting read, and I'm sure that's on our website somewhere. We're on their website, it did say that co-location could be an opportunity, but not the idea of consolidation is just at best way far away. So, anything else on that? All right, thank you very much. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
We have not met since our last LEDGE meeting. Our next meeting will be June 7th at 9 a.m. Also, I wanted to remind all of the legislators that we have a meeting tomorrow with a facilitator for the Human Rights Commission. And that starts at 5 p.m. and goes to 7:30.
Is that here? Where is that? The old jail, right?
I'm sorry. You talking about me?
Where's the meeting tomorrow at 5? At the old jail?
Yeah. Tomorrow, yes.
Yes, okay. Thank you. All right, any questions for Shauna? Thank you, Shauna. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Okay, F&I met on the 16th of May. We discussed several resolutions and passed them all. One was for approval of a contract with LaBella Associates, DPC, for design services for replacement of the Central Chapel Road Bridge over Boise Creek in Town of Caroline, and also a funding agreement with New York State for the same bridge. Another resolution we approved was with Barton Little Judas, DPC, for design services for replacement of the Aetna Lane Bridge over Fall Creek, Town of Dryden, and a New York State funding agreement for that bridge also. One other one was approval of a funding agreement between County of Tompkins and the Town of Ulysses for replacement of Cemetery Road Bridge over Trumansburg Creek, as well as the one that was passed earlier for the airport. And that's my report. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Any questions? All right. Thank you very much. Government Operations Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
We also did not meet since our last legislature meeting. We've already took care of one of our resolutions, and I have another one.
Yeah.
It's Resolution E, adopting Local Law Number C of 2019, amending Chapter 32 of the Tompkins County Code, ID 8619, and I so move.
Seconded by Deborah. Questions? Discussion?
I just say this is the one that we're putting back into the code, the things that were inadvertently dropped that had always been there and were picked up by the audit, ethics audit we had, and we simply are trying to correct that.
All right. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Is that it?
That's all I have.
Okay. Thanks very much, Mike. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Deborah Dawson, Chair.
We have not met since our last legislature meeting. We have an exciting agenda coming up next Tuesday from 12:45 to 2:45. We had to move the meeting because of Memorial Day. We're looking forward to hearing some more from admin and recycling about plastic bags and paper bags. We have a presentation from CCE about a new farm-to-table program. We are going to hear from the Cayuga Power people about their data center plan. We are going to hear about the gun club in Lansing. And we are going to start a conversation among ourselves about energy standards for new county buildings.
Thank you, Deborah. Questions?
Not much,
right?
Well, compared to a PDAC agenda from last year, it's nothing.
Touche.
All right. Thanks very much, Deborah. Michael, Mike Lane, Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee.
Well, that committee did meet on May 17th, and we adopted a whole bunch of resolutions to bring forward here, and some of them have been done on consent, and we have a couple more. We'll be setting up some interviews with our direct reports. That's another thing that's happening out of the Budget Committee. And I do want to mention the fact that we did have the joint meeting with Cortland legislators over in Cortland after the budget presentation by President Montague, and talked to them about the request coming out of the college for increased support from the two counties. I think there was understanding among our group of the need for that. Tone, I think, out of Cortland was encouraging, but we don't have any definite response yet from them as to whether. And remember, we have to go up at the same level. If we increase by 1%, they have to agree to increase by 1%. So we're, the last two or three years, they have not agreed to that. So we're keeping our fingers crossed, and then we're still trying to make them understand exactly how difficult a budget TC3 has right now.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Henry?
Mike, has there been any communication since the lunch meeting?
No, I haven't heard back anything from them at this point. But I'll be checking.
Thank you. Your resolutions?
I have Resolution H, appropriation from contingent fund for terminal pay reimbursement, Department of Human Resources. That's 8653.
Seconded by Glenn. Discussion? Short form roll call.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous.
And we have Resolution I, authorizing the execution and delivery of a lease agreement and a sublease agreement with Cornell Cooperative Extension of Tompkins County relating to premises located at 615 Willow Avenue in Ithaca. That's ID 8630, and I move it.
Seconded by Glenn. Discussion? Deborah.
I'm seriously confused. I didn't think we owned that building, so why?
Jason?
We don't own the building.
It was a loan.
We leased the building and then sublease it back to them. There's two leases. There's a lease and a sublease. So we lease it from them.
So we lease it from them and then
sublet it back, which...
Why?
Provides us an avenue to loan them money.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Dan and then Henry.
Has that always been the case?
I don't know the history. This predates me, but I think it has been.
I mean,
otherwise, you don't have an avenue to do it.
Thank you.
Jonathan said yes?
Yes.
Okay. Henry?
Yeah, that was my question, too, whether this has ever been done before.
I did not create this mechanism, but...
I know nothing.
So I'm just following through with it. I'm sorry.
Just work here, I know. Mike Lane.
I think it's similar to what we've done also with the Tompkins Community Action.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And FoodNet, maybe, right? FoodNet?
Yeah, FoodNet.
Yeah, okay. All right. And I asked Jason about interest.
Yes, and pay interest.
Okay.
About 2.5% over the 10-year amortization of it, a little over $50,000 in addition to the principal.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Ready to vote. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. All set, Mike?
Yes.
Okay. Then let us go to the Resolution K, Legislator Black.
Yes.
That's you.
Yes, I would like to move Resolution ID 8670, resolution in support of the HALT Act, and it is in your red folder. It says human alternatives, but if we can pretend that says humane alternatives to, sorry about that. Long-term isolated confinement, A2500, S1623 in New York State.
Okay. Moved and seconded by Ann Corman. All right, so the word humane, I just saw it on the second page, so it's wherever the title is spelled out, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right, Ann and then Ann.
I didn't have time to review this, unfortunately, before the meeting, but I do have a few amendments that I'm hoping will be friendly. So they are based on the fact that solitary, or what they call solitary confinement, or isolated confinement, is one of the forms of confinement. It's sort of the most extreme that they have in prison settings, but it isn't the only one. So the resolution does also talk about limiting the residential rehabilitation units, or the RRUs, and so I think that it would be good to just point that out as well, that those are also limited and not give any wiggle room, but there are small modifications. It says, whereas New York State must, and there are a set of Roman numerals, I would simply add where it says adopt clear and objective criteria to ensure the limited and legitimate uses of, and I would add right there, all forms of separation and isolation. Is that friendly?
That's friendly. Who's the
That's Annie. Is that friendly, Annie?
Yes.
On the second page, the last whereas, it says, whereas the HALT Act, Human Alternatives to Long-Term Isolated Confinement, and it gives the bill numbers, would limit the time an inmate can spend in isolated confinement or residential rehabilitation units, and in parentheses, RRUs. And then it says, end the isolated confinement and use of RRUs is the second one that I would add.
So I just want to ask, is this in the bill?
Correct. Yes.
This is, okay, it's in the bill. Okay, got it.
Yes.
Okay. Could you repeat that last one?
In the last whereas, on the second line, it says limit the time an inmate can spend in isolated confinement, and I would add or residential rehabilitation units, and in parentheses, the acronym, which is RRU. And the next one is just following that. It says end the isolated confinement, and I would add right after that, and use of RRUs.
So I'm not actually sure that that's friendly, just because as noted in the Senate bill and the Assembly bill, on page 2, line 1, it actually gives a definition of residential rehabilitation unit, and it means a separate housing unit used for therapy, treatment, and rehabilitative programming of incarcerated people who have been determined to require more than 15 days of segregated confinement pursuant to department proceedings. Such unit shall be therapeutic and trauma-informed and aim to address individual treatment and rehabilitation needs and underlying causes of problematic behaviors.
Right, and the reason why CAKE has been encouraging that this also be included is because they do not want, it is a form of separation, and they do not want it to be used as the alternate in excess. So it simply says that it would be limited to, so this is specifically, and I'll read this again, the first one is, would limit the time an inmate can spend. So it's not saying would not use, it's simply saying would limit their use. And one of the things that CAKE is recommending is, although one of the things they're recommending is that the solitary confinement or isolated confinement can only be used up to 15 days, and the RRUs would then be the transition after that time, that it is not used in excess indefinitely, but that the person is then brought back into the regular community as soon as possible. The other is that the isolated confinement of vulnerable people, that they are not put into the RRUs in either, that they are kept in the community because they in the regular population because they are already given therapy, but that they are not separated from. So
okay,
that was
go
what
to
was recommended.
Deborah and then Mike Sigler.
So who's Kate? Who's they?
The people that spoke today, that is the members of the local chapter. It's the New York chapter that has been doing the lobbying for this. And I can give you the acronym.
Okay, Mike Sigler.
So listen, I'm ready to vote for this. I would suggest we don't get too much into the weeds on it and confuse me, because it's not like this is going to pass. This is basically you're asking the state to do something.
Right, and it's either in the bill or not in the bill, but we're not going to change what's in the bill. Leslie?
Yeah.
And in some respects, you're right. RRUs have been used for not the purpose they were designed to be used for. So it's in the bill or not. I want to, I shared with Shauna, but I also want to point out, I don't know how you remember, but on May 17th of 2015, we passed a similar resolution that came out of WDIC on this very issue. So this has been batted around at state legislature for a while, and so we did pass a resolution asking them to support it. It's back up again, sponsored by the same folks, and so we and it passed unanimously that evening, and so we can do the same thing tonight and continue to send that message until the state takes action on it. We held a large event at GIAC. Carrie Blakinger was very heavily involved with this because of her own experience and hearing from people who've been in isolated confinement for years and years and years and years and years. It was very traumatic. So I hope that we can, again, unanimously send this message and that the state will take action and encourage our colleagues in the other counties to do the same.
Rich.
I had checked with Captain Bunce, who is our jail director, what his thoughts were on this resolution. He said it would have very minimal impact on our operations here and that we don't have isolation cells. He also offered the point that the state should be doing more to fund mental health services. And he said thank you to us for doing something about mental health services in our jail, but that if you're just talking about trying to end isolation, you're really talking about a symptom of a broader problem that is just woefully underfunded on a state level. And I thought that was a really good point, so I make it. I will vote in support of the resolution.
So I gave two amendments. We can vote on them separately if you want, if one of them is considered friendly and the other is not. I wanted to offer that as an opportunity. The first one simply says that the time would be limited, limit the time an inmate can spend in isolated confinement or the residential rehabilitation units. As per Leslin's comment, these have been abused, and I think that needs to be acknowledged, that they don't use them indefinitely. So I'm happy to separate out my two recommendations.
Can't hear you, Leslin. What? Okay, so you're saying in the third, whereas on the second page, second line, just to add, or residential rehabilitation units, RRUs, in the middle of that line, to limit the time an inmate can spend in isolated confinement or residential rehabilitation units, right?
Correct.
Okay. And the other change is to add and use of RRUs
for vulnerable people.
In that, so okay, the following part of that. Okay, let's do. Shauna, did you say the first part was friendly?
The first one was friendly, yes.
And Annie, the first one's friendly. Okay, so then the question, but adding and use of RRUs
for vulnerable people,
that you're not okay with, right?
Right.
Okay. All right, so the motion is to add after confinement. To add and use of RRUs, right?
Correct.
Seconded by Deborah.
No.
Oh.
I have a question.
Okay. Seconded by Leslin. Okay.
I want to understand why that's not friendly, because I think that's the whole crux of whether or not we want to vote for it or not.
Yeah, so I would say that it's not friendly because the whole idea is actually being able to offer the therapy that's needed after the 15 days, whether it be mental health therapy or rehab. And that was noted, as I mentioned, with the definition that means separate housing unit used for therapy, treatment, or rehab programming of incarcerated people.
Leslin.
So what I was mumbling to myself here is that part of that therapy and rehab treatment? Is it RRUs are constantly being used to isolate people who are LGBTQ plus, people who have disabilities, and that's supposed to be the rehab and therapy treatment, not folks who had already been in solitary confinement and then moved there. So it's used the way you're saying, but it's also being used in that way as well. So that's one of the reasons why I would second that. And, yeah.
All right, really quickly, Anna.
I'm just, the point is that it's specific to not using them for vulnerable people. And so that's why, that's the list that Leslie was speaking with, and that was
okay.
My reference.
Are we ready to vote on the amendment? Dan.
So I'm going to ask to abstain on this vote and the main motion as well. I'm a seasonal employee of the Department of Corrections of New York State, and I feel it would be inappropriate for me to comment on the policies of my employer.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I would acknowledge that that's give you permission to do that, and Dan and I talked about this earlier. So, all right. Anything else? Ready to vote on the amendment? All right. I'm not going to vote for it. I think that the act is the act. You know, the bill is the bill, and I think it's I want to just, you know, if there's something that's not fully agreed here, I think I'd rather let it go, just personally. All right. All in favor of adding and use of RRUs in the third whereas after the world confinement? All in favor of that, raise your hands. One. Opposed. That's five in favor of eight against one abstain. So that addition does not go through. Ready to vote on the main motion? Okay. All in favor of the main motion, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous with one abstention. All right. Okay. Thank you, Shauna, for bringing this to us. Appreciate this. It's an important issue. And Anna, for your research as well. Motion on the minutes of May 7th, 2019, moved by Rich, seconded by Annie. Any comments, discussion? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Can I get a motion to go into executive session to discuss litigation? Moved by Mike, seconded by Deborah. All in favor, please raise your hands. All opposed. All right. We're in executive session. We're going to break for 5.5 minutes to shut down the cameras. That means, like, let's do this quickly.